Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, this is Grace.
Hi, Grace, it's Anne-Marie.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. How are you all doing?
Hi, Dave.
Hey, welcome. Thanks for your promptness. I appreciate it. Let's begin.
Hi, Dave.
With...
It's Grace.
Welcome. Hey. Let's begin with any wins or progress notes. What's going on with each of you?
I was out of town. Just got back 20 minutes ago. However, before I left, I got a chance to download that book about the roadmap stories.
Yeah.
And I got to read several of the case studies. And that was really nice. It's such a good template, you know, for us. And it's really good that you're requiring us to write these stories, kind of like writing an essay in a class.
I think it really works,
I think, and not only that, the template will be, just as you said in your work, in your material, that, you know, this template will work whether you're talking finances or career or whatever the challenge or whatever the area on in your life. So I really appreciate it.
Well, I think it will be helpful to you to do your own or a client's to really see if it works for you and if it really is what you can use in an ongoing way. And actually doing it brings it alive and creates a way of applying it that is a different level than just a theory and to read about it and discussing it. So I'm hoping it will be helpful. And I'm able to hear what each of you will contribute in that way. So thanks very much, Grace. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? What's going on?
This is Anne-Marie.
Welcome.
I'm sorry. And I just sort of jumped in before my brain had a chance to really think about what it was I wanted to say. So I apologize for this. I have to say to both you and to Grace that Grace, in sharing your example last week, your case study, your personal case study, there was something about hearing your example, the emotion, the context of it, et cetera, that it really just sort of reframed this whole process in my mind. It brought it to life for me. It helped me identify, you know, what story of my own that I'm having trouble letting go. And I've really been thinking about that over the last week, and that, like you said, Dave, bringing it to life in that context really has just sort of brought a whole new perspective into this training and how I might use it with a client going forward. So I thank you, Grace, for bringing your vulnerability and your story and being so open about it, and then Dave for the questions that you asked her and for the, you know, how much further you were able to take it with her.
Okay, thanks for that, and I'm happy it was useful, and I certainly echo the bravery and the forthrightness of Grace to bring your story and to share it with us. It was a gift, and it was very welcome, and obviously you're here and beneficial.
Oh, okay. I'm so happy that it's useful to someone. Thank you, Anne-Marie.
You're welcome.
Anyone else?
Hi, everybody. It's Stephanie.
Welcome, Stephanie.
I just wanted to share a quick, I don't know if this counts or not, but I wanted to share something real quick that has been going on. Part of my old story was that I was what I call a performance kid, which means I performed in ways that I thought people wanted me to in order to make myself valuable and in order for them to keep me in their lives and to see my value as though just me being me wasn't enough. And this is something that I battled with probably for more than half of well more than half of my life. Well, recently, in doing some of the work in the modules, recently my brother and his sister-in-law have decided, well, my brother has decided he wants a divorce after 24 years of marriage, and it has created a whirlwind of chaos in the family, and my sister-in-law is who I used to be, which is that she is the perpetual victim. Everything is everyone else's fault. She can't see when people are available to her and when people, you know, honestly love her and want to be there for her. She can't see it because it doesn't fit into her story, which is very similar to what, you know, my story and my way of being used to be. And so I made myself available to them, and I said, I'm not taking anyone's side. I'm neutral, and I'm here for both of you. And I've offered, you know, support and help to both of them. And recently, this past week, she sent me a really nasty text message, and it was really like, you know, I can't let you be in my life anymore because you're, you know, your brother doesn't deserve the same amount of support that you're giving me. He doesn't deserve any support at all. This is all his fault. She went into victim mode about how everything is his fault, and it's, and that I am an enabler by allowing him, you know, by continuing to support him, and I blocked you on Facebook, and then she went on to tell me some really nasty things that, you know, you need to know who your brother is, and these are some things that he said about you, and it involved a lot of my trigger points, a lot of, you know, she's stupid, she doesn't know what she's talking about, she's not even making that much money as a life coach. You know, my grandmother hated her. And
so can you move to what you've learned from that and the positive lesson rather than a whole number of other negative things? What did you learn from that?
Well, the thing is that I made the decision not to perform for her. I remained who I was. I stood in my truth. And I didn't switch what I was doing in order to have her be in my life. And it's in order to prove my value to her. I understood that I was valuable on my own, and I didn't turn myself inside out trying to, you know, fit into what she felt was the best thing for me to do. And it was scary but freeing, so I'm grateful for that.
Well, it sounds like an important lesson and something that I think you'll each find valuable when we do the module on Master States of Mind, and we're going to do that right after we complete the roadmap. I have a way of listening to trigger points, to mapping trigger points and staying present in a very simple scheme that I think you'll find useful for yourself and for your clients, because so often there are emotional triggers that will instantly create a state change and put us in a reactive mode. And you've described what previously would have been trigger points and emotional cues or triggers, and to move to the default mode of performing. And I think to look at doing that in a different way. And there is a systematic way to address that and for your clients that I think you're going to find useful. So that's a preview of a coming attraction in a very short period of time, in a couple of weeks, actually. So thanks for mentioning that, Stephanie. Appreciate it. Is Emmy with us? She may be having difficulty with connections. You know, I realized this morning when I work with a client in London twice a week, and I didn't realize that there was a time change in Europe a week before our time change. So Emmy may be joining us an hour late. So Emmy, if you're listening to this, our time change back is next week. And this is to everybody that we'll move back an hour and meet like an hour earlier than we normally do because of the time change over this coming weekend. So anything else that would be helpful for us to talk about, any of the concepts or anything from any of your cases or your work, either personally or with clients that might be helpful to talk about and apply this? Or any clarifications about it?
No one else.
Material. I'm sorry. Did someone say something?
Yeah. It's Grace, Dave. I really said that I have a question if no one else wants to share. Okay, my question is, last session you gave us assignment as to who's presenting their case studies.
Took volunteers?
Yes.
Okay.
Volunteers. My question, what do you expect from us? I was thinking that maybe we'll write a presentation or a story similar to what those case studies that you have in the download that I read. Or did you want us to present it to the session, or how do you want it?
All of the above. The sample that I sent around early on, which is like 3 pages, not even quite 3 pages, double spaced, is an example. If you do something like that and read it or present it to the group, that may take like 7 or 8 minutes, and then we'll have another 7 or 8 minutes for discussion.
Okay.
It can be a case study on one of your stories or on an aspect of work with a client, just something to illustrate and bring alive the process and apply it.
Okay, that's very clear.
Does that make more sense now?
Yeah, it's clear. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for clarifying. What else? Anything else that would be helpful to discuss from the curriculum or from our discussion or from your work?
David, Amber, I'm just going through my, I think I have it. I'm just going through my emails to make sure that I have the example that you sent. Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Which day was it sent, Amory?
October 6th.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Dave. I just wanted to make sure I knew exactly which email you're working from. I'm working off of free training classes right now, so.
Oh, okay. Okay, super. And Emmy, you have down for December 7th for you, right?
Okay, this is Anne Marie. I have the first one. I have November 9th.
Oh, Anne Marie, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I will send
November.
That.
I want to make sure I have the example as I go first.
Okay. Yeah. I will send the schedule around. Haven't done
okay.
yet, but I will.
Okay.
Yeah. And just a quick housekeeping, Dave. Sorry, I'll miss that session, Anne Marie. However, I will listen to the recording. I will be traveling, flying back on that day, on the 9th. And then I will have my share or my part the week after that.
Okay.
Okay.
Dave, would you, and Grace may have mentioned this, would you like me to send what I will be sharing ahead of time or just read from?
You're very welcome to do that. I would love to see it if you don't mind, but it's...
I don't mind.
Okay, super. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that because that'll actually motivate me to get it done a little bit early too.
Okay.
Maybe all that's right. Part of my old story too. Is I do better with deadlines and accountability.
You know, I'm going to mention at a later part in the training that that undergraduates at Harvard were given an opportunity to deliver. A paper that was due at the end of the semester that they were invited to create an earlier deadline if they wanted than the deadline of the last day of classes. 75% of them jumped at the chance to do that. Now, when you think about it, that's available to 100% of the people. They can create a deadline for whenever they decide rather than having an external one. But the external one crystallized the idea of creating a different external one, and you know, that's just a reminder to us that once we have an internal point of reference, we don't need the reliance on the external deadlines because we create an internal structure.
I don't do very well when it's when I only have internal structure. I hear a storyline
that you may examine because whatever we think and feel and experience, we're creating each moment. And whatever we experience, we either create or agree to. So that may be an old storyline that you're automatically repeating and agreeing with, and there is another option.
Well, that's a great point. So because one of the things I've been doing a little bit this week as part of another event is some assessments. So two in particular that we've been working with were StrengthsFinder, Discovering Your Strengths, and Myers-Briggs.
Uh-huh.
And both of those, you know, as I dig into both of those, they have a little bit of hardwiring components to them.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
There's an innate, and yes, some of it is, can I overcome it? But, you know, I wonder, and this is just something I explore with clients too. I can try to overcome that old story, or if creating external accountability is another way to manage it, that's actually easier for me than to try to rewrite the old story of internal accountability. Are both of those paths in your mind equally acceptable?
Okay, here's what I would say to how you crafted the story describing this. You described it's there to overcome. Okay, another alternative would be it's not there until you create it, so that you're free to create exactly what you want. So rather than an obstacle that you overcome or surmount or strategize around or in some way create a way around it, it's simply a different matter to not create the obstacle. It's there when you create it. It's there. It's not there when you don't. So the alternative would be to create a new story instead, rather than engaging an old story to overcome it. Because whatever you engage, you're going to enhance.
Uh-huh.
You know, we get whatever we focus on, so that whatever you engage, you're going to create more energy and more of an inclination to repeat it. Does that make sense?
It does. It gets me thinking differently about how I think about hardwiring.
Think of it as you are an energy field. Where you focus that energy field determines what you'll do and how you'll move ahead. If you focus the energy field on an old story and try to think about ways of strategizing around it, you've recreated the old story. If you do that 1,000 times and write 1,000 better endings to the old story, you've etched it further every time because you've
mm-hmm.
recreated the process of the old story each time.
Yeah, just like resisting what you resist, persist.
Uh-huh. Denial is an active engagement.
Yeah.
Engaging something to overcome it is an active engagement.
But part of me always believed, and whether this is the scientist or not, I don't know, but part of me always believed that there are things that are truly who we are, things that we are born with. We didn't necessarily create them. But I think what I'm hearing you say is we've created all of it on some level.
And you create the identity that is a part of that story, because the part of each story, and this is also what we're going to be talking about today, program new identity, because when you do something and repeat it, it becomes who you are. And that's the most powerful force of the human psyche, is that we return to our core identity. So that means when we generate change or do something new or different, if we don't change that core identity to incorporate that change or that behavior as part of who we are, as a revised model, then we'll revert back to the old story,
uh-huh.
and it will become, oh, that's just the way things are. That's who I am. And if you hear a client describe himself or herself as if a habit, a collection of repetitions, were an identity, it's going to be harder to change. So that also is a coachable moment. If I hear a client say, well, I'm just a procrastinator. Well, that to me is a coachable moment because procrastination has been an active choice, so much so that it seems as if it's an identity, but it's not unless it gets repeated. It's not a component of an identity. Now, it may be hardwired because someone may have gotten accustomed to waiting until the last minute, habituated to that adrenaline and cortisol rush of the flurry of activity that finishes just in time, that energizes and then creates a relief that is as you meet the deadline. So that becomes habituated and physiologically habituating, but it's an identity only as long as it remains unchallenged, as if it were a part of who you really are rather than a collection of choices that you've made.
Uh-huh.
That makes sense?
It makes total sense, and I think then the question becomes, you know, how much of that do you want to or do you need to change? But recognize the recognition.
That's what you're paid for.
Yep.
Why somebody will pay you good money, because you can make a difference for them, for their life and business, for the rest of their lives. And your dog agrees with me. Wholeheartedly.
I swear she knows every time I get on the phone. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to mute it so you don't have to hear her. Oh, God.
I want to make a piggyback brief comment on that conversation, Dave, just quick because we have taken time. Like Myers-Briggs was based on Jung's work, and on the I forgot the part of it now. I forgot now, you know, what Jung calls it, but that work is based on his work. And to him, it's always like, yeah, you have these innate tendencies, but those things that we are weak on are like undeveloped part of us and is inviting us to develop, you know. So even though, yeah, we do have those innate tendencies or potentialities, whatever is weak is just the shadow side, he calls it, that we can work on. So we ourselves or our clients.
Yes, I think that's a good point, because the Myers-Briggs are really basic preferences and personality styles that are analogous to basic biorhythms, such as what time of the day we feel more creative, what time of the day, you know, we have other kinds of tendencies, or to representational styles about whether our primary style is auditory, visual, kinesthetic, or some combination. So there are preferences that we have as story writers and certain innate aspects that are part of a fingerprint that can be ones that we continue to use and that can be useful to know and to understand and can be revised to some extent, but they're basic preferences and are useful information to become more empathically attuned to clients as they write their stories in a day-by-day and moment-by-moment way. All of these aspects and these tendencies and preferences and styles, I think, are very useful and very useful to know.
Yes.
Uh, Okay, well, thank you. A great discussion and some great points that you're making. And we're going to reiterate this, and I want to be sure we get to the step seven, because this is exactly what each of you are talking about. So we're at module three now, step six, author new experiences, and we're going to also talk about step seven today, program new identity. Now, we trust our stories. They're our reality. And remember, as we've talked before, whenever a client is talking about their experience, how they see things, what they're doing, it's not an old story or a new story. It's the way things are. It's how they see reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. So we have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Remember, we talked about happiness is when our blueprint and our life experiences fit. If there's disharmony, if we're unhappy, then we'll have to change one or the other, the blueprint or the life experiences, in order to restore that sense of happiness. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we try to revise how we see reality. Now, we've considered if your story doesn't allow you to do certain things, if your story is that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't do technology well, you'll live out this assumption. And we always monitor our impact as coaches with our clients. What works, what doesn't, how to dose time and titrate our responses, how to incorporate the client's work and performance style and personality into the work, to not respond personally to the client's stuckness or resistance. There's a paper, I mentioned this before, but it fits with what we just discussed, that has to do with neuro-linguistic programming and work and performance styles under the Articles tab on my website, and it's called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. So as we guide clients to author new experiences, at first, the idea of change will create some excitement usually. Then, as it's on the cusp of action, anxiety. Then, expansion. And then, finally, mastery. Now, listen for a couple of additional aspects that can appear together and may seem paradoxical to you. And so this is a view from a wide-angle lens, because it's a developmental overview of writing a new story. One, every step forward means relinquishing a past position. Someone must mourn. They must say goodbye emotionally as well as practically to a familiar, maybe long-held and practiced old story. This is a process. It's a developmental step, not something you can just say and make it so or recognize it and change it. It's like saying goodbye to an old friend, to give up a habit or a pattern of behavior or even a hope that by getting the old story just right or doing it better is going to make it work. So no matter how maladaptive, the old story still has to be mourned. For example, each of the hundreds of young women with bulimia I worked with as a psychiatrist had to mourn her bulimia, her loyal companion, the way that it was there when no one else was, in order to come to the end of her past, to successfully move on and redefine her identity, not as some disorder or as if something were the matter, but as a way station to becoming more who she really is. Two, the more subtle aspect in learning something new and creating change is an injury to self-esteem. Now, that really seems paradoxical, but this carefully crafted old story, even with some aspects of identity attached, is replaced by something better. So it's kind of a narcissistic injury, because the very best that somebody could do now is recognized as something that there is something better. There's a better way to proceed. So I see some components in this dynamic of change. And these are not headlines. You're not going to see maybe a manifestation of each with a client, but these are just to think about yourselves as coaches, as internal conceptual markers for your work with a client, for the change and transformation. the myth that there is a perfect choice, the illusion that the perfect choice will solve all problems, the disappointment that nothing is perfect, and the arrival at adulthood to recognize there is not an ultimate arbiter of fairness, the development, also arriving at adulthood, the recognition that nobody else is going to take care of it for you, the growth to take the next best action, and finally, the consolidation, the happy-sad experience resulting, happy about the autonomy and the mastery of moving ahead, the effectiveness of not constructing an obstacle, and sad about mourning an old story. Now, to author new experiences, sometimes we have to think outside the box. So how do we actually do that? What is the box even? How do you think outside it? Randall Kennedy put it this way: thinking that frees itself of reflexive obedience to familiar signals. This is one of the quotes I saw printed on the student union at Princeton. How do you know when you're in the box to get out of it to revise your story or write another one? Now, these questions assume the story is there. It's like a given in the universe, as if the story, the proverbial box of the familiar and accepted, is the obstacle. But as we were talking in the question and the discussion, Adam braided what we were about to say. The obstacle is not there until you create it or accept it. And people are always free to change their minds, their beliefs, their core assumptions. So the box is the result of programming and conditioning. It's self-created in adulthood. Now, boxes are not a bad thing. They don't have to be limiting. They can be defining, guiding, validating, expandable. Listen to a couple of examples of different boxes to hear how very arbitrary and situational each one is, and each has its own intrinsic set of beliefs, behaviors, and rules. People treat a piece of processed leather as if it were sacred. They protect it, hide it, try to steal it. There are all kinds of rules about what you can and can't do with it, even who can touch it or hold it. If it crosses an arbitrary line somebody draws, it can count for different points, 2 plus 2, 3, sometimes 6. Football. Listen to one more. It moves in and out of your life. It varies daily. You want more, but you may keep doing the same thing not to get it. People can do the very same thing and obtain inordinately different quantities. You can buy it, sell it, but the price changes daily, even moment by moment. It's a stand-in for what you want, even for what you despise. It's the most desired legal substance to all peoples of the world. Money. And one more. There's no clear definition of winning. It's always at risk. There's always a price to pay. There's always another level of success. Money, your life story, your wellness story, your relationship story, your career story. Now, here's a footnote for those of you who work with executives or business owners to write the next chapter of their stories. The box can be limiting or inflexible. The canal boat companies of the 1700s didn't become the railroad companies of the 1800s. They stuck to their box. And in the 1900s, there were no Union Pacific Airlines. They stuck to their box. Good to gone. Motorola stuck to their story and slid from a premier electronics firm to a troubled industry. Meanwhile, Nokia asked and listened to children and young people just developing their stories and used their feedback to become world class. Good to great. So, open yourself to possibilities you may not have imagined yet. Scarcity is a rigid box. Abundance is expandable. No one can grant you freedom. You have to declare it. No one gives you power. You have to generate it, claim it, and not give it away. To recognize yourself as the author, the creator of your story, challenges an assumed model and leads to the deeper question, how can I create something else instead? And what will that something else be? Now, to simply stop doing something is not complete change. A new story means incorporating new behaviors and beliefs. So you have to embody, actually live your new story. To abstain from an old story, from stuckness or repetition, is a beginning. But someone has to engage a new story before an old story can be given up. A mind that accepts a new idea generates a new dimension. A brain that creates a new experience alters its neurochemistry and neuronal pathways. Neuroscientists now know the brain is sculpted by changes in experiences. The mind can change the brain, and it's an inside job. So here are a dozen AAA principles of change to author a new story. The AAA principles are these three: awareness, acceptance, and action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Not the intention, the results. Intention doesn't matter. Honestly assess each of these storylines with a question: is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams, yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns: health and money. A not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you're still going to have to pay in some way. So, for example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. Now, another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this. I think each of you are going to make such a difference in so many ways. And that makes it easy to pay, and this doesn't even seem like paying because it's my passion. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. So think of price as a privilege. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You generate the energy and give power to your story. Here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give power to your story and it assumes a momentum and a life of its own. Remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. Here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt, procrastination. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure exactly what they want. Here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? The first two questions a travel agent asks: where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? And a goal works like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. Now, a caveat here is to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And what you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's kind of like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. An example of this principle. Paul Conrad, political cartoonist, said of Charles Conflin, a 1940s radio preacher, "I knew that somebody who had to holler that loud couldn't be right." And consider this, most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. 4, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific, measurable goals? In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, that 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. A similar study was done over 30 years of Dartmouth undergraduates who graduated. 3% had goals. Guess what? In 30 years, that 3% had 97% of the assets of that graduating class. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and energy and strategy. And I'd suggest to review in the workbook section the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success. It begins on page 3.13 in the curriculum. And these are things that you know already that I want to highlight. 1 is establish SMART goals, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. And a timetable for that might be somewhere between 30 to 90 days. For each SMART goal, determine 3 key initiatives. And a timetable here, 7 to 10 days. And for each initiative, a next best action for each initiative. And a timetable here, 24 hours. So you can see how you ladder the strategy to move sequentially toward the SMART goal. It's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time. Where and when, the travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. December 31st, 2015. Here's a good idea. I want to make more money. Here's a goal. I will generate $220,000 from coaching and $215,000 from products and royalties in the next 11 months. One more, a good idea. I'll save more for retirement. Here's a goal. I will set up an automatic deduction of $300 a month from my checking account to automatically deposit in my retirement fund, a continuity program that requires a good decision to only be made one time. Then, write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, a quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs and every August riding on the coast of Maine. But you guys will have to substitute your own goals here. Then reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. For example, if you feel overwhelmed at work with the amount of tasks, identify one specific thing that you can do in the next 24 hours that will give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action of shrinking the change creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He averaged 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was asked how he kept himself going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead when he was interviewed just after the race. His response? I just kept running to the next telephone pole. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed really curiously out of focus. As I met with him each week, I'd glance at the photograph until finally, by the end of the year, I mustered up enough courage and I asked him about it. He said, "Look carefully, Dave, what do you see?" Well, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography didn't help. I'd been published in National Geographic World at that point. And I said, "Steve, the only thing I notice is there's one branch and one tree in focus in the entire picture." And he said, "Exactly. That's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly." Which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes 25 to 30 days to reach, to really etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent, and that's for simple behavior response things. Remember the NASA astronauts. Write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. The difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, Malcolm Gladwell tells us in Outliers, is about 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is really simple. Good parents have known this for centuries. Sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. So we can foster change by conscious practices and effective tools. An infinite sea of new patterns and possibilities can be created to further new goals. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experiences. A new story has to replace the old story. And there are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. And that's what we're learning. That's what we're talking about. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your spouse or partner, ask on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees and colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Bemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior, juxtaposed with contribution, has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself. He remembers who he is and why he is important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. Find people who are already successfully doing what you want and getting what you want. Research what they do in order to do your version of it. Make it your story. Ask, learn, question. Make it your story. Guess who said this? "It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer." That was Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an interesting statistic. After giving a complete presentation about the benefits of their service or product, more than 60% of the time, seasoned senior salespeople didn't ask for the order. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve the client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. They responded to her in two ways. This is the most amazing report. And how did you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, a kind of sidebar here. You may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide, compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say narcissism means chance. Now, there's a review of research on goal setting that's in your workbook because I thought it might be helpful for clients to see it too. Helps us understand two essential components. One, why people give up on goals, and this was the focus of the research. But also, the reverse is true, how effective goal setting can ensure long-term achievement. So it provides success insurance. So look at those six most important reasons people give up on goals, because the inverse is success insurance. And because of time, I'll let you do that, but I would recommend looking at it. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You've spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. He went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? He added, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500. In his first year, he netted over $1 million. So take a chance. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Bion was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah. I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. Well, when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. Well, you're supposed to run day after day, 18 hours, and sleep 6. Nobody told Cliff this. So when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. He shuffled along for almost 4 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity in the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Story gives birth to possibility. Stories are a way that we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. Step 7. Program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Remember, we were just talking earlier that the most powerful force of the human psyche is our identity. It's something we return to. So that any changes or different behavior that's made, unless we also transform the model that we use to operate on, our core identity, we'll revert back to where we were before. And keep that in mind in working with clients. This is why it's important to have a parallel process of looking at and addressing change and addressing how someone is seeing themselves and looking at revising their operating model of how they see themselves, how they incorporate change, how they're reflecting on their own increased capacity and their own self-assessment. So this is, I think, a crucial aspect of what we help clients do in this process of self-reflection and looking at and revising their model. Consider a couple of things. One is mission statement. In business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and provide meaning to your daily activities. It adds focus and commitment to what you're doing. Now, a mission statement contains four elements: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Ideals are the core values that motivate and guide you. They define what's important to you. Purpose is what you wish to accomplish and needs to be consistent with ideals. Strategy is simply the art and science of a plan of action. And we've talked about and you know about goals. Effective goals are SMART goals. So create a personal mission statement. What is your life purpose? What are you meant to do? This is a compass to guide your story to personal fulfillment, a true north. I'll share mine. To inspire and guide others to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Write yours down. Read it every day. Another aspect of programming new identity: follow success trails. Have you said some version of the following? I want to change careers, but I'm not sure what I would do instead. I'm not sure I know what to do instead. I'd really like to get in shape, but I don't know where to start. I want to play a bigger game, but I'm not sure what a bigger game is. Decide how you want to expand. Then pick success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you might want to do. Ask if you can take them to lunch or dinner and pick their brain, or shadow them for a time to observe. When my good buddy Art heard that I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practice and had completed my professional coach training and certification, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he left IBM as a senior executive, and prior to that at IBM, the number one salesperson of a force of 10,000 in the country for three successive years. He told me how when he made his transition to take a very early retirement and start his own consulting firm, he picked five very successful people and asked them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do. People had done something very similar, and he knew that they had some success trails, and success leaves clues. He advised me to do the same. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition picked his brain for substantial picking fees. So create a support team. Construct perhaps an advisory board, a networking group. Engage a mentor. Join a mastermind group. I want to return to the idea here as we're talking about programming change and making it permanent. The art and science of affirmations. Remember we talked about a vision as a way to rewire your brain, and affirmations are a way to program your mind software. And we're talking about programming here, about changes. To achieve a goal, reprogram your automatic pilot by affirmations. It's a way to have a sustained and repetitive positive focus. Affirmations are positive statements that state the goal as if it's already been achieved. They provide the context and support for visualization. Affirmations make a visualization a complete story. It's the story to support the visualization. For affirmations to be optimally effective, some of these characteristics, perhaps all of them, need to be incorporated. One, present tense. Begin with, I am. State the goal as if you have already achieved it. I am enjoying this month of skiing and steamboat. I think you had to be persistent. Positive. Your brain will strive to achieve the image you focus on. The purpose of an affirmation is to create an image. A positive image is more powerful than ideas. Personal. Make your affirmations about your experience and accomplishment. Your experience, your accomplishment. Don't try to change other people's behavior. Here's one I guarantee you from personal experience from a number of years ago that will not work. I am watching my daughter clean her room. They have to be about you, something you can determine. Next, visual. You use all five senses, different lenses, wide angle, close up. Make a complete picture of experiencing the success of your goal, the experience of it through all five of your senses. Make it emotional, including a feeling word. I'm happily interacting. I'm peacefully experiencing. A primary reason that we do things is how we imagine we'll feel when we do it. Brief. Brevity is the soul of wit and affirmations. Specific. Be clearly focused and specific detail to make it real. Nothing global, no abstractions. Use action words. I am driving, I am acting, I am living. If you say, for example, I'm going to, well, you'll always be on the way. Or it'll always be a theory. Consistent. As soon as you let up on the disciplined, focused pursuit of a goal, your automatic pilot will revert back to the familiar. That's the frustration of losing weight and then letting up to have it regained. Remember the astronauts who got day 15 off and had to start all over. And finally, add or something better. One of mine was, I'm enjoying this month each summer riding on the coast of Maine, or something better. The something better materialized 3 years ago when I got to have a home in the French Quarter to spend the month of November writing. I in medical school there, I would jog in the French Quarter and look back through the iron gates at the courtyards and wonder what it was like back there. And now I spend Novembers in one of those courtyards in a private home writing with my two favorite writing companions, a single malt scotch and a cigar. So write each goal and affirmation, each goal and affirmation on a 3x5 card. Read each one at the beginning and the end of each day. And remember to visualize yourself as already having achieved the goal. When you program your system with a visualized goal, you create structured tension in your brain, cognitive dissonance, the difference between where you are and where you visualize and affirm. Your brain then strives to end this tension by actualizing the goal. And again, affirmations provide the story to support that vision. Structural tension or dissonance in your brain will give you creative ideas. It will help you see things you haven't seen before, a perceptual shift like yellow jeeps or new possibilities. It will provide motivation to take action. And remember from when we talked before, the universe rewards action. How long do you do this? Well, until the goal is realized. How many goals should you generate affirmations for? Well, a reasonable amount, at least three, maybe more, that you're working on daily. In this way, you create the feeling, the experience of internal success. You inhabit the experience. An affirmation will initially perhaps make you feel uncomfortable or even anxious or create a voice of wondering if you can believe it. With an affirmation that's positive and not yet challenged, you're challenging the core belief of your identity, of who you are. You are each alchemist. Alchemists are people who believe in potential, in transformative power. And the very best place you can begin is yourself. And remember, one final word. Remember the most important lesson from everything I've said during our time together today. Just keep going to the next telephone pole.
Mm-hmm.
So, your thoughts, questions, things you'd like to add or ask or discuss? How is this sounding to you? I mean, this completes our roadmap, the look at the seven steps of deconstructing an old story and reconstructing a new or revised one. So, what's your take so far?
Well, it's so inspiring, this session. It's just there's so many times when I just like did a fist pump in the air, you know.
Okay.
So, take a chance. It's never too late to start. I mean, that especially, you know, appeals to me. But I want to share a little a story. At the beginning, you said, no one gives you power. You have to claim it. There's as you know, I have my PhD and just finished a couple months ago in mythological studies. And the oldest myth on record is the myth of Inanna. And just briefly, when she was a young maiden, she took a journey before she got married. She took a journey to the God of Wisdom to prepare herself for her new role as queen and upcoming wife and mother. And so quickly, the God of Wisdom entertained him, and they shared drinking beer, and he got inebriated, but she stayed sober. And while he was inebriated, he gave away wisdom. They called it ME, which is just skills and knowledge and wisdom that is necessary to create a civilization, because this is in Sumer, which is now Iraq. Anyway, so whenever she was given something, she didn't just receive it passively. She claimed it. And she said, I take it. Every time she received something, she said, I take it, as if the pronouncement of it is a ritual that transfers power from the giver to the recipient. And so as soon as she had all these 80 me's, she loaded them in her boat of heaven, and she was off with all her, you know, knowledge and wisdom and skills. And then when the God of Wisdom woke up or sobered up, he wanted all the me back. And so he sent everyone, his servants to get the gifts, but too late, because in her process of saying, I take it, and when she stood in front of the God of Wisdom, you gave me this, and I took it, I take it, you gave me. So she was enumerating all the gifts. And so by the time they wanted back, too late, because her claiming the power, like priesthood, godship, she already became it. So the moral of the story is like you said, Dave, to claim it. Don't be passive about it. And this little old myth says exactly what you said about the new story or the new whatever. You know, you don't just receive it passively. You claim it.
Thank you for sharing that. That really provides some depth and amplification of it. I want to mention something else that Grace mentioned, and that is that what she described as being in an optimum state, a state of optimum performance, and anchoring that, like the fist bump, that is something that as you do again and again, you create an optimum state, you anchor it, and often it's with a body movement, like clapping or a fist bump or a word that you say. When you do that again and again, you can immediately get into a state of optimum performance, like for doing a keynote or for any other state that is optimum for a certain situation, for like a state where optimum performance might be to go to sleep, to get in a very relaxed state. It may be a phrase that you focus on that is your anchor, the phrase and the physiology, the phrase and the physiology of breathing in a deep breath of relaxation and out of tension. But what she just described is a way of creating that sort of instant state readiness for an optimum performance. So it's a good example as well, and thanks for both the story and the illustration of that. Other thoughts, other questions or thoughts, things you'd like to share?
Dave, one of the action steps, the 12 action steps, it's never too late to start. I'm glad that you also added in not letting conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions. One of the things that I'm experiencing in my business, this is a second career for me, and I'm 45 years old, so a bit, quote, young to be starting a second career in the eyes of many. Where I took it to is it's never too early to start either. I get a lot of, I struggle a little bit with credibility. I know that's a story that I need, that I'm working on. An old story that I'm working to change. When people look at me and, you know, wonder why I'm in a second career or why I left a particular company where most people retire at a certain age, et cetera. Uh-huh. So it's never too early to start, and how that can be an advantage was a place that my brain went as I think about this new story that I'm writing.
That's excellent, yeah. I saw my wife off this morning. She went back. She's doing a PhD, and she just turned 50. and she's doing a PhD, and all of her cohorts are in their 20s and 30s. So she's asking some of the same questions from her own perspective.
Thanks
for sharing that, We've got just a minute or two. Any other comments briefly or things you'd like to add? Thanks for sharing so much of what you are. It really brings it alive, makes it meaningful.
There's something about these last three or four steps in the roadmap that have really made these principles so much more tangible and alive for me. So whether it's been in the sharing of the examples or that these steps are a little bit more active than the first steps, I'm not sure, or all of the above. But I as Grace was fist bumping, I feel my arms almost like a runner, you know, the momentum signal, just sort of ready to go and excited about November 9th when I'll be sharing my example.
Yeah. Well, I suspect it's all of the above. Actually, the first five steps are more about planning, to recognize, own, assess, decide, and map the changes. And the last two steps are really putting it into action, to author the changes, to program identity. So I suspect it's cumulative, and I hope the examples have followed and brought it alive about how it needs to be put in action. But it's a cumulative process, and actively doing something is, you know, recognizing, owning, assessing, deciding. Those are active components, but there's a different level of activity in really bringing it about and bringing about the process of external change to match the internal change. So thanks for mentioning that. And, yeah, I really look forward to the roadmap case studies as well. So thank you all for your very active contributions and very meaningful ones. I appreciate it, and it really does bring it alive. I look forward to picking up with you right here next time. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you all.
See you guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.